everyone. This is Chris Keith for Premier Guitar. I am in one of my favorite places in Nashville, East Nashville, Gym 5, with Jared James Nichols. Jim, how you doing, buddy?
Good, dude. We're in the gym doing a rig rundown. This
is
crazy.
Does this place look familiar for this guy?
Right there, that corner wall.
Jared James was gracing our cover here for the June 26th issue.
Blessed, man.
Congrats.
I mean, yeah, that's a big milestone for me, and I love you guys. You know that, and we love Adam and Gym 5.
Yeah.
And I got a bunch of shows coming up and stuff, but we wanted to knock this out. What, that came out yesterday?
Yeah.
And now we came to the gym when it's after hours, and we are going to make some noise.
Yeah, we're lucky enough. Adam's a good friend of ours, and he's also a guitar dork, so he speaks the language. But before we get too far into gear, I want to talk about the album, but I want to talk about some changes in your life. Since we last did the Rig Rundown, Basement East just up there with John Bollinger, who cannot be with us. He is being a softball coach for his Betty.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
And I imagine he's the best coach possible.
I bet he is, man. John would be.
Actually, John is not a sports guy. So I can only imagine the pointers he gives.
Aw, he's so sweet, man. He's just a sweetheart.
But speaking of being a father, we're fathers now. What's that been like? Congrats on Jet.
Dude, thank you, man. It's amazing. I mean, my life changed overnight. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me. You don't know until you're in it, right?
Yeah.
And what I always tell my friends is, I used to think when I was on tour, I got like the worst sleep ever, you know? And now when I come home, I'm like, man, when I'm on tour, that La Quinta bed, man, it's like a vacation.
Yeah.
But being a father has opened my eyes to so many amazing things. And it's made a lot of things a lot bigger than me. And it's put a lot of things in perspective, you know, losing my father and now being a father. There's just a lot of beautiful moments happening, and I just feel so lucky to have them.
I want to make that connection, so it's three generations, is that you just got a Chevelle.
I did.
And tell me about the importance of that.
Yeah, so I'm a big car guy. I always have been. When I wanted to be a mechanic before I found guitars. Like, I had zero interest in music until I saw some local kids at a talent show, like, tearing it up on Black Sabbath. And I was like, oh, maybe I could play drums to that. Found the guitar. But before that, I wanted to be a mechanic, man. So my father and I love Chevys. When I was a kid, I used to get like Chilton's manuals and all these manuals, and I would study, and specifically A-body, like Chevelles, Novas, El Caminos. And for some reason, I felt such a connection to these cars. Me and my dad and my brother, we ended up getting a 68 Super Sport, restoring it, getting it pristine. And then, you know, I was obsessed. And then the music bug hit, so I got into music. My dad got cancer real bad, had to sell that car for medical bills. It like tore us up, you know? It was like the family pride and joy leaving.
Yeah.
And I always said that no matter what happens, life is so short, you never know your perspective or how long you have. I was gonna get another Chevelle. And especially after we had Jed, I was like, I'm gonna get a Chevelle and I am going to like just have this experience with my son because it means so much. And I found one on Facebook Marketplace 10 hours away in the middle of the night about 3 weeks ago, messaged the guy, talked to him the next morning, got on a flight the next day, and I went and bought it sight unseen, did a few things to it, literally brought some sockets and wrenches.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, got her rocking, and I drove it straight back to Nashville, 10 hours.
Wow.
So not only do I play guitar just with my fingers, I love to work on cars with my fingers, you know? So it's the Chevelle thing runs deep, man. Even when I showed a picture to my mom, you know, she can't believe it. I showed her this cover. You know, I texted her and whatever, and she's like an old lady on the phone, but she was like, oh my, how did you do that, you know? And she saw the Chevelle and she goes, is that Dad's Chevelle? Because it looks so close,
wow.
The rims, the color. And, you know, it's like Jeff Beck, you know, I got to talk to Jeff a few times and he would always talk about cars and stuff. And, you know, there's something about like in the blood of, I feel like guitarists, especially musicians, using your hands, whether it's working on an engine, we're working on an engine, you know, it's the same thing.
No, I got to ask, because this came up when you talked about being a mechanic and then, you know, pivoted to guitar.
Yeah.
When was the last time you had like a backup plan or like a real job?
So I'm the king of odd jobs.
Okay.
I was forever, because before I moved to Nashville, I was living in Los Angeles. And I remember when I moved there, my parents were like, we're not supporting you. You know, like you got to figure
tough
it out.
Tough love.
Yeah. So I was a mover. I did landscaping. I did, I swept floors at a studio. I painted walls. I did anything I could to make money. I've never really had a real job. I've always been kind of one of these like handymen.
Good for you, man.
But with that being said, it wasn't until probably 2 years ago with the whole music thing and everything where I started to be able to say to myself, you know, like, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Because any of you that are watching this, if you ever have any indication, having your own trio like me or having a band or being in a band, it's like all of a sudden you run a small business. And it's like, for me, I got to pay everyone. And my guys need to get paid. Everyone needs to eat. And then I'll eat last, right?
Yeah.
So all I'm saying is, whether it's we're starting a construction business or we're a band in a van, you know, in a trailer going down the road, a lot of the same principles apply where you got to work as hard as you can and you got to be realistic, you know, for making money playing music. But all that being said, you know, I've never had like a real job. I don't know if I could hold a real job. I'd have to be like a bail bondsman or something, dude. I could be a professional gambler. No, just kidding.
No, I know you'd fit in real well, professional wrestler. Let's if I ever got challenged to a tag match, this is my first call.
That's great.
Now, speaking of jobs, you do have one, and it's Tyler with Tyler, Music is Win.
Yeah, I do actually have a job.
You're a podcaster. You're a YouTuber.
I got to admit, I'm a YouTuber. You know, well, Tyler Larson, a good friend of mine, he runs a YouTube channel called Music is Win.
Yeah.
We actually did a video like a year ago, and I want to say it was about, you know, like merging blues and kind of like hard rock and metal aspects. And I remember we went and got food after we did this video for his YouTube channel and we hit it off. Like 2 weeks later, he texted me and he's like, hey man, you know, you're pretty good on camera. He's like, did you ever think about like doing something like that? And I said to him straight up, I was like, dude, I don't even own a computer. So anyone that's watching, if you want to know how old school I am, for better or for worse, probably for worse, I don't have a tablet, a computer. I have my smartphone. That's everything I got. I said to him, I was like, dude, I could never do something like that. I don't have that kind of skill set even. And he was like, oh, no, no, no. He's like, I think we should do a podcast together. So we started to do it with no like kind of like reservations about it, just to have fun. And literally, it's the first time in my kind of career of music that something has like kind of just blown up the way that has. It's hilarious.
It's called the No Cover Charge.
No Cover Charge podcast. And now we just released an app with all the podcasts on it and lessons and tutorials and behind the scenes stuff. And it's so much fun. So now I have the best of both worlds because when I'm home here in Nashville, not only will I do like songwriting or, you know, recording sessions, but now I have this podcast and this app that we do, which is so much fun. And then I get to also be JJN, go on the road, tour, make my own records, and it's awesome. And I get to be a dad.
All right. Before we get to go any further into Louder Than Fate, I do one last question. How did you get hooked up with Greenbrier? You have
Greenbrier whiskey
coming out.
Yes.
You have whiskey coming out.
Shout out to Kevin at Greenbrier, Nelson's Greenbrier Whiskey. We actually have a JJN barrel. I picked a barrel of whiskey. So I played at, actually, it was here in Nashville. I played the bowling alley.
What's Eastside Bowl?
Nope.
Brooklyn Bowl.
Brooklyn Bowl.
We got two bowling
alleys. We got some bowling alleys in Nashville. Played the Brooklyn Bowl last year. And this guy walks up to me after the show. And he's like, hey, man, I don't know if you're a whiskey drinker. He's like, but I work at this distillery. And it's a funny story, but talking about the Chevelle and my dad and stuff. I remember after my dad died, I wanted to buy, you know, just a bottle of whiskey and reminisce. And I was at Sinker's in East Nashville.
Yeah.
And I picked up Nelson's. And I looked at the guy and I was like, you work at this brewer or this distillery? And he goes, yeah. He's like, I'd love to give you a bottle. And I was like, dude, I'm in. So we became fast friends.
Okay.
Told, you know, he's come to shows and he's like, he's such a rocker. Shout out to Kevin. And he goes, hey man, I think we should do like a tap your own. And I was like, tell me more. So I got with the team there, went there for a whiskey tasting with my friend Jeff. And we literally, dude, we tried like six different whiskeys at like 9 a.m. Not a great idea when you have a full day.
Yeah.
And we ended up picking one. And I was like, dude, this is amazing. I'll be able to take this, you know, and show it off. And they got a bottle. I signed the bottle. We're having a big event there. And 2 weeks later, he calls. He goes, you got to come check this out. We found a lost barrel. A barrel they didn't know they had.
Wow.
So I went back and I tried that and we picked that. So it's even more special. It's one of the first barrels that Greenbrier, since they've been back,
okay,
made.
Wow.
So it's like almost 10 years old and it's awesome. I have so many random things like this whiskey happening that are so cool.
You
deserve
it, man.
It's cool, man.
You're the best.
It's fun, dude.
I love Jared. Now, let's get into the record, Louder Than Fate.
Yeah.
By the time this comes out, the record will come out Friday. We're going to time it where this comes shortly after that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say it's... Obviously, you don't want to put your best work each time. And I think for you, this is it because not only do you shred on guitar and that's like your flag, always will be, probably. But in this sense is that I feel like you're really stepping out as a songwriter.
Yeah.
specifically, I think the hallmark or the kind of crescendo of the record is Killing Time.
Thanks, brother.
So if you want to tell us about that, let's start jumping into that.
Yeah.
And then tell me about kind of how the discovery of that song became.
So here's the thing with this record, like many records before, I've always dived all the way in. My last record was self-titled. I released that in 2023. I recorded that here in Nashville at Blackbird Studios with a producer named Eddie Spear. And I had this almost this like chip on my shoulder where I said, I want to make a record like my heroes made a record. I want to walk into the room, rehearsed off tour, and I want to record it straight to tape. That's what we did. So that last record I made, it almost sounds like a stick of dynamite going off. It's like, it's as raw as it can be. You can literally hear me like groaning, you know what I mean, while I'm playing and I'm getting into it. And that record, I just felt like, after I had that record, realized it was like I got something off my chest. So when I was kind of getting ready to do this Louder Than Fate record, I thought to myself, man, I have so many things I want to say, not only as a guitar player, but as an artist, as a singer. And I really wanted to focus on getting those out. And I used my guitar as a vessel for these songs. And I think this is the first time that I didn't walk into the recording session or the songwriting for this aspect and just think to myself, what's the guitar part I'll play that will get people excited or, you know, will feed my ego? It was almost like, let me play to the songs. Let me see what I can come up with that feels right and it feels like it actually means something. All of my favorite guitar parts, I mean, going back in time, have all been something that haven't really been just about the flash. If the flash is there, that's great, but you take apart anything off Billy Gibbons or Paul Kossa, any of my heroes, it's like the part was there for a reason. And I think that that's such a powerful statement.
Yeah.
Especially in today, like I stripped everything back, man. I mean, I went so bare bones that I used the guitar simply as a voice and a vessel for these songs, just like my singing voice. And when it came to that song, Killing Time, I've never played anything more like exposed. I mean, the guitar part itself was this really simple kind of... just really quiet, right? And when I'm singing it, so it's this really kind of, and I almost was scared to do it because I was like, this is too, like, I hide behind.
You know what I mean? Well, I was gonna ask that. Like,
so all
the vulnerability.
It's my voice and it's the guitar and the song truly too. It was written in a place where I was like recalling like real life events. So like, you know, it was almost like I was getting a little misty and I was like, oh man, I don't know, this is heavy. And when we were in the studio, I just kept like, it sounds cheesy, but I was following my heart. I was following the song. I just let the song develop. That's what I did with all these songs. I just let them do what they wanted to do naturally.
Yeah.
When we got to the end of this song, literally, man, I was talking to the producer, Roger Nichols, no relation, but a great friend. And we were talking about it and he goes, this song needs to go somewhere, man, because it's this really just kind of this like, oh, it's this dark cloud of a really,
it's
you know,
a brooder.
Yeah. And he was like, it needs a big solo at the end. So I came up with this very simple chord progression in the key of E minor. And I remember he goes, all right, let's just keep it there for the day. He goes, go home. He goes, I want you to think about what you're going to play over this. And that to me is like, I'm always a guy that like draws from the hip. So I'm so ready in any moment. If you give me any guitar, any amp, anything.
I've seen it.
Yeah, I'll go for it. And I'm not scared of any of it. But with this, when he said that, I was like, oh, hold up. Like, now you're putting me in a different...
You're making me think it.
Yeah, you're making me, like, stop the energy and really kind of, you know, digest it. So next thing you know, I'm at home, and I put the song, and I was like, I can't listen to it. Like, I can't listen to the rough mix because it's going to throw me off. So I just go to bed that night, and I'm driving into the studio, not even listening to music, and I just start almost like... I felt like I was, like, just humming melodies. And I hummed this melody and I was like, maybe something like that would work. And I thought of like, dude, I was thinking about the greats, man. I was thinking about David Gilmour. I was thinking about Mark Knopfler. I was thinking about Jeff Beck and all these people. And what's so awesome, and we'll talk about gear in a bit, but instead of going, hey, I need to, you know, put all these pedals on and I need to like get, you know, turn it up more. The only thing I did is I just rolled up the same tone volume.
Okay.
And so where it was going, you know, so we get through the chorus and it goes, and we go into the solo.
Uh-huh.
I just turn the volume all the way up. So So I played the solo there, and I just went for it, and I just built this solo up, and it's just a really, really fun thing because it starts from a whisper, you know, and all of a sudden it goes like... Bring it back down. We have, you know, it's just right there.
Yeah.
So I want to approach my guitar playing in this record like a voice, like pure, where it's like from a whisper to a scream, it's still the same person doing it.
Was it a struggle knowing you had kind of like all those other moments prior records on stage where it's kind of just firepower with you?
Yeah.
And so then like in those moments where you're like, that's probably your first move is like, okay, go gas.
It's always my first move. My first move has always been, I'm going to shoot faster or I'm going to move faster, because as anyone that's watching this, like you all know, you know, in this environment with guitars, it's almost like we're in the guitar MMA sometimes where literally, dude, it's like, I need to prove to you right away how great I'm going to be or how technically advanced or how, you know, heady my tone is.
Yeah.
And over the past like 2 years, I just really got like out of that mindset, and I thought to myself, I just want to sound like me. You know, I was listening to like, this is funny, but like, dude, I was listening to like a lot of like Joe Walsh and the James Gang, and I was listening to like Mark Farner and all of these guys, and I know they're all throwbacks, like, you know, classic late 60s, early 70s guys, but what I noticed about all of their playing and their singing and everything is they were just doing their thing. You know, Leslie West, Billy Gibbons.
Yeah.
And that's where I wanted to live. And I wanted to do that more because I felt like now in 2026 and beyond, I wanted to have my own voice in a way that I wasn't afraid to be vulnerable, but also I didn't have to like hit you across the face with my guitar every time I picked it up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Now that's a big wrinkle that's, you know, never really been seen or heard from you before. Another one that I wanted to touch on was Way Back.
Yeah.
That one's a kind of another left field. Tell me about that one.
Yeah, man. So
it's greasy.
It's greasy. So there's a song on the record. It's called Way Back. I wrote it with a friend of mine, CJ Solar and Cole Phillips. And those dudes they're country dudes.
Okay.
So they've written with like Morgan Wallen. These are buddies of mine. So it wasn't like we went in this stale songwriting session and it's like, ugh, we have 3 hours to write a song. It was like, we were hanging out, right? So it's in drop D. So whatever I do, I always bring to these songwriting sessions. These guys are talking. We had this thing where it was, the chorus was, so that was like the chorus line. But it was like before that I was thinking we were singing these lines and it reminded me like old country. So I'm such a crazy person that like I was going, so it is like that country vibe, right? But it's funny when you put it with that trio context and the way that we were playing, it came out and it had this kind of swagger. And then that song was all about, oddly enough, is like taking it way back. It's like when, and this is almost like, I guess it's like a phrase, right? Take it way back when things were easier. I think a lot of times, especially with music and stuff, my favorite music, man, it was built on a feeling.
Yeah.
It was like, just do your thing. And I wish that the world had more of that where it's like, just do your thing, I'll do mine, and you know, we'll all live together. Because with some of these sounds, you know, when we got to the we went from like this kind of country-ish, you know, and then by the solo it's going. But then going right back to. Maybe that's the Nashville rubbing off on me.
Well, dude,
I don't know.
It's funny because it's like you say it's country, but any more of those country acts, especially modern country, it's like they're big rock bands.
Really, it
so
is.
So it's kind of like it's like Southern rock in a way, but that was another one that perked my ear.
Oh, yeah. And the thing for my playing, like if you guys didn't know or some people are they aren't privy to it, I don't play with a pick. So a lot of those like twangy things, they come really, really natural. So
yeah,
if I want to play and I do that. Thank you. So right along the side of that, I'll turn up the volume. So I don't know, man.
You might be more Nashville than Waukesha now after all this time down here.
Yeah, I'm more Tennessee than Wisconsin. Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, man. And so there, another one I wanted to touch on before we go gear is Ghost.
Yeah, yeah, Ghost.
Tell me about that one.
So Ghost is, so like you, I grew up in a time where I was hearing all the classic stuff. I was hearing grunge. I was hearing post-grunge, yeah. Right? So everything from like Alice in Chains and Soundgarden and Temple of the Dog and, you know, then it was getting into Silverchair and it was getting into, I was hearing that stuff as a kid.
Frog Stomp's unbelievable.
Frog Stomp's great, dude. Oh. Yeah, the first record I ever bought with my own money was Freak Show.
Oh, wow.
So I had that. I went to Walmart.
Yeah.
And it was like $11. I think I had like $20 and I bought my brother and sister. I don't know how I had $20. I was like 7 years old. But they were like, hey, we want a CD too. So I got them Tonic. So they had Tonic and then I got Freak Show and I was like, whoa. And I put that on. That guitar sound, I was like, I don't even know how to play those songs, but everything's, it's like that. It's so disgusting.
Yeah.
Long story short, I was hanging out with my friend Tyler Bryant. So if you guys know Tyler Bryant, Grammy award winning
new dad.
We had our kids like within like 2 weeks of each other. Love him and his wife Rebecca from Larkin Poe. Great people. But I went to a studio, and whenever I hang out with Tyler, it's like literally within 5 minutes, I walked into his studio. He was on the drums and he's just looking at me and he's playing this groove. He's like, doof, 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 doof. And I looked at him and I was like, oh, okay. So I just grabbed a guitar and I remember I turned on like a Tweed amp and this is what I did. I went. So we just started playing that, and then I played the riff, which that turned out to be kind of the chorus of Ghost, and then I played this riff that turned out to be the verses, which is that. And I gotta say this, a lot of people, you know, you'll play in drop D or whatever, and they would look at that and they go, dude, that's like the simplest riff. And it totally is, but it's all about, with all of this music stuff, what I'm finding out the more I play and the more I jam is the feel of it.
Oh, yeah.
To get that.
One of the simplest, but my favorite riffs of all time is Walk.
That's it.
That's like two notes.
So when you hear these riffs, like, and jamming with Tyler, and Tyler's, you know, a guitar guy, but he can play great drums, great bass. We wrote that song in like 15 minutes just because we were having fun. And I think, with this record, above anything I've done, everything has been brought out because of the fun and the fun of music. And I think that when you're writing, when you're playing, whatever you're doing, you have to approach it like that because there's that other side of your brain where you start overthinking things and you're like, is this going to be good enough or whatever? For me now, it's like whenever I pick up the guitar, it's like, man, I just want to have that feeling like, you know, like I'm on a roller coaster and it's like, let's just go, man.
Well, man, I feel like that's a good enough tease for Louder Than Fate.
Yeah.
Cover story. Definitely check that out. The record is definitely out now. Let's move on to gear. Tell me about this coaster. I know we're going to talk about the Futura, but tell me about this coaster here. This looks different than what we're all used to seeing you with.
If anybody knows, they know that I've been seen with, for the past almost 15 years, Black Star Amps. And just recently, I made the switch to Marshall. Now, my relationship with Black Star is fantastic, left on great terms. You know, I've had multiple signature amplifiers with Marshall or with Black Star, and I've loved every minute of it. And I've loved all the tones and working with them. They're a great team. But I would say about a year and a half ago, I was on tour and I started to do this thing where I was running two amps. And I was using an ABY box, and everything was just super simple. So I was using two of my signature JJN 50 Blackstar amps, 50 watt, two channel amps, and one of them went down. I couldn't get another amp from Blackstar in time for the next show. So I went out, and the shop in England had a Marshall. So we got the Marshall, you know, went out and bought it.
Yeah.
It was apparent right then and there that regardless of the brand with Blackstar, Marshall, Mesa, whoever you're using, that the sound was exactly what hit me right here. Mm. And I started talking to friends of mine, people like Zach Wilde, Bonamassa. I mean, you name it. I was talking to like a cast of characters, and I was like, what do I need to do? What's this martial world? Because for me, I didn't know a lot about martial. I knew, you know, what most of us know, but I hadn't really experienced the thrill of cranking a martial.
Yeah, Blackstar kind of snapped you up pretty quick.
Yeah, so yeah. I've been playing Blackstar since really I started my trio.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, shout out to Charlie Daughtry down in Texas, he borrowed me a 1968 Whoa. Super Lead Plexi. Wow. And he goes, here, man, plug into this. I actually picked it up. It was JD Simos for a long time.
Okay.
So it was in JD, and JD used that back in the day when, you know, when he was slinging a Les Paul. So next thing you know, I'm sitting there. This is before the last record. I'm sitting there, and I have this Holy Grail, a 1959 Super Lead 68 Plexi. And I plug it in, and I'm telling you, man, I literally, I'll make sure this stuff's off. I just hit a... And I was like, okay. The first thing that I noticed, and something that I've been really trying to do a lot more of, is just get like closer to the tones I love. Mm. And I plugged straight into that amp, and the feeling of it, it was like I was on a bull. It was like I was like on a Bronco, because there were some things that came really quickly that I loved, but there was other things where I was like, ooh, this does not sound, you know, it was like exposed.
Yeah.
But the one thing that really got me intrigued was, no matter how much I turned it up, I could still hear my picking under it. Mm. And one of the big things for me is, since I'm a fingerstyle player, I need that dynamic range.
Yeah.
So next thing you know, I'm hanging out with Bonamassa, or I'm texting Zach Wilde, hey, what'd you use on this record? And what, you know, it kept coming back, Marshall, Marshall, Marshall. So I'm like, oh man. And you know, this had nothing to do with anything besides the sound. So a friend of mine, Joe from Hailstorm, he has a great relationship with Marshall. Next thing you know, we're like neighbors, and he's got 30 Marshalls in his basement. And I go, all right, man, let me try some of these. So next thing you know, now I'm totally like, you know, it's tickling my fancy. And one thing led to another where I got hooked up with this amp right here.
Okay.
This, a very expensive coaster, is this is one of the new Marshall modified 1959 Super Lead Plexis.
These are both the same then?
Yeah, so these are both the same amp. I'm running them a little bit differently.
Yeah, tell me about that.
So check this out. So this amp, what makes this so cool and why you should check it out, because I had, you know, the thing with that 68, the original Plexi, it was so loud that I legitimately, after about 5 minutes, I was starting to, you know, and it was like, it was crazy.
It was saying something for you.
Yes, dude. And I'm what? I'm already like, I'm already like basically tore up. That amp was so loud. What they did with this, and what I loved, and I talked to one of their engineers there, this guy Steve, who's amazing. They were able to put some modifications in this Plexi that remain faithful to the circuit it is, but certain things, like they added a transistor to the gain stage. So before, where it was really, you know, it was going to be really quiet until you got it up to that point, now you already have almost like a built-in kind of front-end push on it, right? You can put the bright switch in or out, which can really, especially with certain guitars, man, that amp could be so snappy, you could cut that bright switch out, right?
Yeah.
And then the big, big thing that I love is it has a master volume. So you don't have to run it at 7 or 8 in order to get it to roar. Because right now, I'm running two of these, right? And I'm running them both at 9 o'clock. So, I mean, this is the kind of amp where if I went into a club right now, I'd feel good at this volume.
Yeah.
Which is saying a lot. Like I said, I am running two of them together. And with that, this first one over here, which I'll just call A, this is being ran basically very kind of liberal. It's really straight up everywhere. It's almost got a little bit more treble. It's a little bit cleaner. But what you'll notice is I'm running both channels at 10. And then I'm using the master volume because I feel like, I mean, I've played these amps now a lot. When you run the channel at 10, it gives you a lot more push on the front end than you kind of delegate with the master
back
volume.
Back end, yeah.
Now this one, and what's really cool with these Plexis is I'm running this one kind of gnarly. Bass is all the way up, middle's all the way up, treble's kind of back down, basically no presence. And it just has this big woofy feeling.
Yeah.
And running them together, it gives me, now this is, let me see here. If I just play the amps. What I love about it is no matter where I'm at on my volume, I can really kind of articulate with my hands what I want to do. So if I am at 10 and I go, super touch
sensitive.
And that's
sensitive. So crucial for what you do.
So crucial. Yeah. And then if I want to get my Paul Koss off, or like my, you know, my playing in a trio, I want everything to sound big. So I want to go, you know. Having that sound where I can play these big chords. And then vice versa, if I want to roll back. Bringing it all the way back up. So I love it.
Yeah.
And that's no pedals or anything.
Killer.
Straight amp. And I feel like, above all, with companies or whatever, when I plug into these amps, I literally am so close to touching the sun of everything I love about tone, whether it be Leslie West, Cream, Clapton, Graham, all of that stuff that I just worship. When I'm playing these, it's like I'm so close to the heartbeat of what it is.
Yeah.
It, in my mind, it makes me want to tell the truth.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Now, telling the truth or helping you speak that voice.
Yep.
What do we need to know about speakers?
These are just stock as they come. 1960 okay. Lead cab, which has the 75s, GT 75s. And then this has greenbacks. This is just a straight cab. Since I've had these Marshalls, I've been kind of comparing different speakers. And the biggest thing I can say with the greenbacks is it's super classic, right? They break up a lot quicker, and they have a really, really beautiful way of kind of making the notes sing. Whereas this is a little more tough.
Okay.
It's a little bit more punchy, but when I use them both together.
Yeah, I like that you're blending it, like, you know, two different cabs.
It's pronounced, man. And one of the things I love is, in, you know, not to overplay, but if I'm playing and I just want to, if I hit this pedal, right? Well, I'll put this one back on. How I had it.
You got a pickup booster over
there.
Yeah,
so I'll talk about that. I just feel like there's so much push and pull that when I'm playing, like, it gives my fingers a thrill, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's cool.
I mean, I trust that the gear is phenomenal and it gets you closer to the sun, but I bet you would sound awesome with a crate.
Well, dude, that's cool too. I think that having exploration, and one of the big things that happened with the Black Stars, right,
yeah,
is I played them and I played them and I played them so faithfully that what I started to notice was, one of the things as a player I love is to not totally lean into gear, to be able to sound like you with whatever you plug into.
Yeah.
And when I was relying on playing those Black Stars all the time, it was fantastic. But I remember when I went from the Black Stars, which also have a lot of modern things about them, and I went back to these. These ones were like driving a muscle car, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's like literally, it's like you got to play and you got to hold on and you got to harness it. And the louder you get, like these amps, if you don't like work them the right way, man, they'll go out from underneath you. It's cool.
Well, going on to guitars, yeah, can you talk to me about this Explorer on Ozempic?
This monstrosity. So this, my friends, is a 2025 Gibson Futura. You might be saying to yourself, what is this gnarly, gnarly guitar?
Yeah.
So this one right here, I have a few of them from Gibson, which is crazy to say because they haven't made a ton of them. This is a mahogany version, right? They also gifted me a beautiful Carina version, okay, which would have been like what it would have been in the beginning. But long story short, back in the late 50s, right, Explorers, Flying V's, Moderns, and these were those late 50s kind of futuristic styles.
Ted McCarty, right?
Ted McCarty.
Here we go.
And this guitar has a lot of like lore behind it, but this was the thing. I never saw one in person. I've never ever seen anyone play one of these. I looked on YouTube and there was like a guy in like Japan playing one in like the 90s, which was a custom shop. And I remember I was starting to like mingle, you know, because obviously I love Les Pauls, obviously. But I was starting to be like, man, maybe I could play some sort of different body style. And I was hanging out with Joe and Lizzie from Hailstorm, because like I said, they're basically neighbors. Uh-huh. And she has a million Explorers. So I was like, can I borrow that Karina Explorer? So I borrowed it. And I fell in love with it right away. And I was like, oh, this is so sick. I loved the way it felt. I loved when I sat with it the way it felt. I loved how it was sitting on my body. And you know, it's almost like I got a little hanger for my yeah. arm. So when I had this Explorer, then Cesar from Gibson hit me up. He's like, dude, you should have asked me. I have the Artist Proof Karina 001. So I started playing that one, which was like a Murphy aged crazy. And I literally said to him after about a month, I took it on tour. I said, Cesar, I can't take this guitar and play it more because I'll fall in love with it and I'll never give it back to you. And he was just kind of like, well, just play it. And I was like, no, I can't. Like, I this thing's so sick. So then I started looking around and lo and behold, I saw a picture of this in a book about like the V's, the Karina, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, what is that? I hit up one of my friends. His name's, if you go on Instagram, it's Fried Okra, Chris Blakey.
Oh, yeah.
Who owns a Kossoff Burst and all these guitars. I was like, dude, you got any Karina or you got any Futuras? He's like, yeah. So he sent me one like 2 days later to play. And this was like a reissue. And I simply fell in love with the oddness of it, man. This headstock, the body, everything feels like a really tactical kind of, almost like a really cut down Explorer.
Uh-huh.
But the way that it sits, I just felt like I had no kind of,
kind of fits you perfect.
I love it.
Yeah.
And also it had this thing where, you know, with a Les Paul, it's like, oh, you think of all these amazing players that play Les Pauls. With this, it was like, I didn't have anyone else to gauge off, so I just played it. And it's super aggressive, but also what I love about it is how classic it is. It is a design from the late 50s from Gibson,
mm-hmm.
and it's so much fun to play. I've fallen in love with it, man. And I'll always play Les Pauls, but I'm proud to say I'm probably one of the only dudes who's playing one of these, and I just think they're so cool and classic and fun. And if you ever get a chance to try one out, get one. And if you ever see one for sale, just call me. And you know, no. But it's cool. It's basically exactly what you'd think it'd be. I did put Seymour Duncan Antiquities in it, so the pickups are the only thing that are changed on this guitar. I had my friend actually build me a black pick guard because the ones that you buy from Gibson, they had white. I thought it looked a lot meaner. And the original prototype would have had that black guard.
Now, because I'm not familiar with that, just like the lore behind the Modern, was that actually put in production? Were there actually like old 50s floating around?
So there are, it was never a production guitar, but there are like prototypes. I want to say there's like three, maybe someone could comment it, but there's pictures of them.
So there's real ones.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
The one's called the Ponte. And that one was floating around from a guy, Ponte Gonzalez, in Texas in the 70s. Tony Dukes, a famous guitar seller, got it from the guy. But there's pictures. If you look this up, it's this dude standing, I believe, in front of like a 59 Caddy.
Oh.
The Caddy's roached out. The dude's sitting there, and he's got the body of one of these. And it looks like it's been underwater and just in a war. And he's holding it. And so there is a picture from the 57 NAMM show of them holding one.
Okay.
So they were around, but like three to five, maybe. But what I thought was really cool is, you know, as classic and as heritage as it is, it still feels like a modern guitar. And I feel like it fits me perfectly. I also love the aggressiveness of it. It's like the Dean before the Dean. You know,
I can't
what I mean?
Wait for the signature to come out.
Yeah.
Signature model.
Come on, Gibson. Let's do this thing, man. But tone-wise, it's just what you'd expect. So here's our neck pickup. Middle, really nice, it gets quacky. What I love about the middle position on any Gibson, take this one from me, kick that that neck pickup back to like 8. Keep that bridge at 10, and you get that. Instead of that. And then the bridge pickup is just an absolute snap. Just a great guitar, man.
Now, I imagine the Antiquities, with the name being that, they're PAF.
Yeah, they're like PAF-ish. The cool part about these too is they're pretty microphonic. So when you're,
oh yeah,
yeah, it's like it's not necessarily a guitar that you'd be like, oh yeah, let me throw like a lot of gain into. But as you play it, you get those sweet spots of that. So it's got a lot of tone in it, man.
Dude, yeah. Well, before we get out of time, let's go through some other guitars here.
All right, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, this is old Dorothy, right?
Yeah, this is Dorothy, man. So this guitar you guys have seen before, this guitar will never leave me ever. This is my favorite guitar in the world. You know, it's, as a Les Paul goes, when I think of a Les Paul, I think of this guitar. Early 1952, if you don't know the story, it's got a great story. I won't totally repeat it, but shout out to my buddy TJ Duckweiler, gifted me the body after he found it after a tornado in Illinois. My friend Joel Wilkinson, rest in peace, Joel, I love you, took this guitar, he rebuilt, hand-built a neck for it, fitted it all together, and the electronics, everything untouched. This guitar, simply to me, is just one of the best. It's obviously, some of my friends joke, they're like, man, it's a half a guitar. And I was like, well, yeah, it's half a real guitar, you know, this part. But what's cool is it's such an early Gibson. It has these cool diagonal, you know, slot screw pickups. The body's thicker. It has all these cool things. It's got a two-piece flame maple top. Things that you know, you'd find on a 59 Burst if you're looking for that.
Yeah.
But also, the fact that it survived a tornado and it's, this guitar, I feel like, truly does have a ghost in it. There's something about this that I just can't get away from. Every single day I pick up this guitar and I'm just like, wow, man. And like I said, all the electronics untouched. It's just a really beautiful instrument. And it goes, like I said, from a whisper to a... It's got those tall knobs.
Yeah.
Everything about it, man, is just... But don't let it fool you. You know, it's an old guitar, but man, this thing will...
Still screams.
She screams. Those are original. And a lot of you might be thinking to yourself, man, I don't want to play old guitar, like 52 Les Pauls. They're weird. Yeah, they are, but they're awesome. I mean, this thing has so much tone, and that was so cool about this. No matter what guitar I pick up, if I'm in the studio or on stage, this thing will always stick out. It's like the tone of it always has, whether it's the P90s or whatever it is. It just has a really beautiful voice, and like I said, this is a lifer, man.
Yeah,
this guitar is a lifer. It's been through the mill, brother.
Now, between that and I know the mahogany, I know you had the Carino Futura. Did you use that on the record?
Yeah. So on Louder Than Fate, that guitar was used extensively for a lot of the kind of heavier stuff, a lot of the lead, and the only other guitar that was really used was this. This guitar, I feel like, truthfully, I was doing a lot of that, you know. All that kind of country. And then that guitar was used for a lot of the heavier parts, but one of the star parts of this guitar, truly, is like when I roll the tone off, Like, let's say you do the woman tone, so you roll the tone off, you know, and I'm back here on the bridge. I turn these on, and it has the... So it's this... I use that a lot on the record. There was parts on the record, man, where Dorothy, I would play the same pickup, and I would just turn it three different ways, and that was the sound of the whole thing. This was like the sound of Killing Time. And,
oh, all right.
Yep, so I just played Dorothy straight in, and it has all of that, you know, that kind of... And it was with these Marshalls, and then you can step on a pedal, and you have all... Just an absolute beast, man.
I'm going to be your guitar tech.
Oh, yeah.
Come on. Let's bring it to the future.
Bring us to the future.
Here we go. P90s.
Yes.
Or I should say P90.
P90. What you see here, everyone, is this was my last signature with Epiphone. I did three signatures with Epiphone. We did Old Glory, we did Gold Glory, and now Blues Power. So Old Glory, the first one, simple, stripped back, Les Paul custom that kind of got mixed in with a junior, right? Single P90, a volume and a tone. And I love that guitar. I played it for years, the original Gibson, still have it. If anyone wants it, man, just make me an offer. I'm just kidding. Still have that guitar. And
diapers are expensive, brother.
Diapers are expensive. Just call me. PayPal, Venmo, no. So we did the Old Glory, which was a faithful recreation of that guitar. And then we made a gold top version, all gold, super sick. Put a Seymour Duncan pickup in it. Then with this iteration, Blues Power, all Pelham Blue, right?
Love that.
Yeah, it's got my signature JJN Silencer P90, yeah. Which is great because, let me do this. If you go here, amps are all the way up. And let me tell you, when you're on the road, I love Dorothy and that's a quiet guitar, but if you have P90s, you know that whatever venue you walk into, you don't know what's happening. You don't know if you're walking into it. It's gonna be crazy, right? So having this pickup is like having like a secret weapon because it retains, and Seymour and the crew over there did a crazy good job. It retains all of the essence, what I love about a P90, but it gives you that comfort of knowing, hey man, I can be really loud and I'm not gonna have to fight with that buzz. I remember one time, dude, I was on stage, I was playing with Skynyrd, Watch Your Feet, right? This was in name dropping, this was in France. And I had my original Old Glory. I couldn't play the guitar because the buzz was so bad that the buzz was literally over my actual tone. And I was like, man, this sucks. So having this is like, you can buy these pickups if you guys want to check them out. Having this though is like a secret weapon for P90s. And it's got Locking Grover tuners. It's just an all around great guitar.
Man, I was gonna say, when we were out, Perry and John Bollinger and I went out to Santa Barbara, we got to go to Seymour Duncan, got the tour. They were still like kind of doing final R&D on your pickup, so it was cool that we got like a preview of what was gonna happen.
So sick, man. Yeah. Like for instance, with this guitar, it gives you all of the shimmer, everything that, you know. I still get all my P90 kind of. But then as I kick on pedals and stuff, you know, I don't have that. Gives you all that sensitivity at the volume knob. So. Seymour Duncan, simply put, man, if you want to get a silenced version of a P90 for your favorite guitar, I know it has my name on it, whatever. Besides all of that, this pickup rocks, man. Yeah. They killed it.
Well, let's move on to this old red here.
Yeah.
While we're doing the guitar switch, tell me about strings we should know about.
Strings, yeah. So I rock DR strings.
What gauges?
DR, all of these guitars are set up with 10 to 49s. And let me tell you something. I'm using these DR Veritas strings, right? These dragon skins. And I did a tour, man, it was almost 2 years ago already, but I was with the Winery Dogs.
Oh, yeah.
And we went across Europe, and I had Dorothy. And I never changed the strings. I did like 9 shows back to back with them, and I never changed the strings, and they never faltered. These DR strings are so rock solid, man. I'd put them up against anything. They hold tune great. And what's cool is they have this like coated core, right? I was never into coated strings, but it's a coated core, so like it still has the vintage kind of winding, so it feels like a normal string, but it's really tough. Mm. They're super durable, and they last forever.
Yeah.
And the people at DR, it's like, it's homegrown, man. Like, these are good people, and I love working with companies and working with people where I can talk to them on a weekly, a daily basis if I need to, if something's up. And with DR, they have been so good to me over the past few years that, honestly, man, I put them on everything now.
Right.
And they're awesome. And this guitar is actually, it's kind of like a recreation of my old 54 Les Paul, old red. I actually got this guitar about 2 months ago, and it's been in the rotation now live.
Okay.
I got this from a company or a store up in Indiana, Evansville, called More Guitars. It's a Gibson made to measure, right? It is, when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I plugged it in and I was like, wow.
Okay.
This is a great guitar. This humbucker P90 combo is so gnarly. I put one of my silencers in it.
All right.
So it's got that in it, right? This is just a stock Gibson custom bucker. But this guitar, dude, snapped me up. I don't know if it's in tune. Let's see. But it snapped me up, man. Check this out. So this thing just barks. No pedal. So with the pedal. It's a great guitar. So here it is. We got early 50s guitars. We got weird stuff. This is to show you guys, and like Gibson didn't ask me to do this, but I'm saying it. Some of these custom shop guitars are so killer. Like this was hanging on the wall and I went and tried it. Do not sleep on these custom shops, man. These Murphy Labs are crazy good.
Yeah. And love the red. It's good.
Yeah, it's cool. But it gives you that thing with the gain off where if you wanted to kind of do that, you know, you want it to have a little bit more of a... You get your P90 sparkle, you know that... But then that little in-between position where you get that the bridge going. You know, so if I go like this... has something different going on where you have that combination.
Yeah,
it's really special, man. And simply put, man, this is a great guitar. I'd put it up against about anything. I was on the Bonamassa cruise just a few weeks ago, and I was jamming with Joe. We did like Mississippi Queen or whatever, and I was jamming this thing, dude, and it was
Cooks.
So it's a great guitar.
We've had 3 pedals kicked on and off throughout, so tell me about them.
Yeah, so basically it's so simple. We're running the 2 amps, right? They're just running together, just a little bit different kind of pushing. One's a little bit more toppy. And then back here, I don't even have this in front of us because I just didn't think that, I'm not really clicking it much. I have one of these Whirlwind selectors, which is just an ABY switch.
Yeah.
It's Old Faithful, I've had that thing forever. And then that's kicking into a Polytune tuner.
Gotta have it.
I'm never in tune, so it really doesn't matter. But
it looks like you're trying.
I'm trying to be in tune. So I got the Polytune. Then I'm going into this little bad boy, and I just leave this thing on all the time. It's a Seymour Duncan Power Booster, right? It's one of those mini pedals. And when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's cool. I used to have one of those old school Duncan pickup boosters. Mm-hmm. This thing, man, it has, it's just like a little wake-up shot, right? So if we have our amp here. I click that on. So it just takes these amps and it just kind of goes, hey, how you doing, right?
Yeah.
And
it's party.
I put that on like halfway and I just leave that. So even if I have no pedals in front of me, if I have that little guy goosing up the front end of these amps, I can go from that, you know. Uh-oh. Sorry, my bad. It happens. So that is always on, and then I have some big dogs in the front.
Yeah, add to taste.
Add to taste. And you guys might laugh. You might go, Jared, where's your pedal board? But to be honest, I've had these on pedal boards. I just carry them with me like, you know, like some people carry like a really expensive watch or whatever. I just carry a Klon, dude.
Yeah, you just smashed when you told me.
Yeah, so funny enough, I had another Centaur. You guys will like this story. Some people will grin and be like, ha, ha, ha. But I was playing a gig and I went to click that thing on. Button went straight through.
That's what's going to happen when you got 17 size steel toes.
And I looked at it and I went, oh no, that was an expensive click, right? But I'm getting it repaired. But this is another one. This is the one that I originally got from Bonamassa. This was a gift from Joe. And
hell of a guy.
Hell of a guy. And thank you, Joe. I love you, buddy. This pedal travels with me everywhere, man. But I've been using this now, and I'm using it really when I got the Marshalls, not to get into a tangent, I was trying to find drives that felt good in front of a Plexi. Like everyone, it's like, what's gonna sound good? Do I need a Tube Screamer? Do I put like a Archer, whatever? And I kept coming back to, dude, put a Klon in front of the Plexi. And it just has the thing where it just takes what's already being pushed and it just takes you to another place. So if we have a, you know, if I just have a, no Klon, then. It basically puts a secret sauce, and I know what people are gonna say. They're gonna say, dude, it's so expensive, blah, blah, blah. It's all in your head. It might be.
Yeah.
But I love the way this sounds.
But if it makes you perform better, that's.
And also, it was an amazing gift from an amazing friend.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
every time I look at it.
It didn't cost you anything.
Yeah, and every time I look at it, I think of Joe, and I just say, let's go. You know what I mean? So without. So it's beautiful, man. I love it. And then on the flip side of that, I got this crazy guy, which is a 1980 Tube Screamer, also from Joe.
Nice.
So this is an OG, like a real McCoy. And what's cool about this is I love the guys at Ibanez. I love you, Tyler, all you boys, but they react differently. Mm. They react differently than the new ones. They're not so mid-pumped. And what it does is it just kind of opens up the sound. So like, literally, if I sit here and play. Without the Tube Screamer.
And they're both on batteries, right?
They're both on batteries, yeah. I just leave them like that because, I mean, I'm just taking them with me and I'm just putting them down. I've had times, I think I've told this on the last week rundown, someone tried to steal a Klon from
me. Yeah.
And like, it just gets to the point with some of this stuff where it's fun to play, but I don't want to be in those situations, so I'll just pull them back.
Dude, I'm going to try.
Well, dude, check this out. If I keep this one on the Centaur, right, and I'm playing, and let's just say I'm playing whatever, I you know, I'm playing a solo or whatever, and I'm... Then we put this one on with it. Dude, get out of town.
little creamy.
It's good enough for me.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Well, before we get out of here, I do want to ask you a question about not playing with a pick. I know you've told this story before.
Uh-huh.
Is it something that you were like, you started off playing with your thumb and then you just got so far down the road that you're just like, well, I guess this is my thing? Or was it a conscious decision?
Well, actually, here's the thing. I'm a lefty. So when I write or when I eat or anything, I'm using my left hand.
Uh-huh.
So when I first picked up a guitar, I was playing it kind of lefty. The guy at the music shop goes, hey man, flip it around. You're playing it the wrong way. So when I played it, I just went like this. And when I tried with the pick, it just didn't feel right. So I started to really rely on just my thumb.
Uh-huh.
And then I started to use this kind of like two finger thing. And then it was three fingers and then four. I tried to do the pick, but it just never felt like my motor skills were like there.
Yeah.
Like if someone went like dun, 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 I couldn't do it. I was like, So I just developed this technique with my fingers. And a funny thing about it is a lot of players and some of the teachers I had like growing up, they'd be like, if you don't play with a pick, you're never going to be a professional guitar player. And I was like, all right, cool.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing now, but you're on covers of magazines.
Well,
so
what's funny about that is I just said to him, I was like, well, I don't care to be a professional. I just want to have fun playing the guitar.
Yeah.
And that's my whole mantra forever is I just want to have fun. So no matter if anyone wants to take it as serious as they want, at the end of the day, it's all about having fun. And for me, every time I picked up a guitar and I had that thrill and I'd be playing with my fingers. And I remember the first time, man, I was playing with Buddy Guy and he went like this. And I was like, what? You know, this is what I was a kid, man.
Yeah.
And I heard that sound, that. And there's just something different about when the flesh hits those strings, right? Especially in a blues setting. And I just chased that sound. And, you know, it got to the point where I went too far. And then this is the best part, is people started to go, hey, you're the no pick guy. And I was like, okay.
Yes,
so
I guess
it turned into my thing. So the only thing I can say to anyone that's watching this, if you are like me and you have something about you that's different about your playing or whatever, go with it, run with it, man.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it ultimately will define who you are, a characteristic of your playing that will make you uniquely yourself.
And the other part of that is have fun.
Have fun, always, man.
Jared,
none of this stuff.
Again, have continued success, but seriously, congrats on the cover, but also more importantly, Louder Than Fate is a killer record.
Thanks, man.
And if you wouldn't be so kind, or would be so kind, could you play us out?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Thank you guys for listening to my rambling. I'm just going to play a little bit.
Take us away, Jared.